poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Your other host. That's me, Jay Jonathan Carlin.
We're not getting into it. Why don't we just go ahead and get started with today's corny joke?
We are getting into it.
Because
other host.
Because I'm pretty sure last week we forgot our corny joke.
Did we?
And that it's a vital part of every episode.
I don't feel like we did forget it. But by all means, please drop us a corny joke, other host.
Maybe part of the gag will eventually be one of us thinking that we forgot it and the other person thinking we remembered it.
And neither of us really knowing.
And neither of us really knowing. Yeah, okay. So, why was the stadium so cold?
I don't know, Ben. Why was the stadium so cold?
Because there were a lot of fans. Oh, goodness gracious.
That's a good one. This is one of those things
where it's like, if do fans inherently make it cold, or do they just increase the amount of wind flow, air flow, whatever I'm trying to say? Like, if you're just moving 70 degrees across a room,
right?
Is it still 70 degrees? Or like, would a stadium full of fans actually make it colder? I actually have the same question as it pertains to sound.
Right.
So like, how does sound stack upon one another? Like, if you have a 5 decibel sound,
yeah,
and then someone else has a 5 decibel sound, do your 2 5-decibel sounds equal 10 decibels, or are they the same volume?
Or is it like harmonizing?
Harmonizing.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just like, it's like even more 5 decibels than it was if one of them wasn't there.
Or is it some, is it like straightforward math like that? Is it like 5 and 5 equals 10?
Right.
You know?
Or is it like 5 and 5 equals 7.5?
Here's my thought, is that if I'm sitting here just humming at 5 decibels and you come in and also hum at 5 decibels, you've added more sound into the room.
Correct.
Right? So
yes.
To me, that is louder.
Okay, but
you're right. I see the problem.
This is like, yeah. It's also like noise canceling headphones. So the way that noise canceling headphones work is they are taking the they're like taking a pulse on the, like, they have a microphone facing outward,
right,
to the outside world,
yeah,
and then they play the opposite sound waves inside your ears, mm-hmm, so that they cancel out and create zero noise, I think, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the best explanation I've ever been told. So, like, okay, so for example, I think there's an app where you can play the same song and then like everybody in the room can have the app open and it is like having like a boombox, except all you have is everybody playing the same song at exactly the same time.
Right.
Or is that just filling more crevices of the room with, again, the same volume of sound? It is just easier to hear from more locations.
I think it is louder.
It is louder.
I think it is louder.
So
that's my hard, definite take on it, and I can't wait to be proven wrong out there. I am interested about the fans too. Is it like, if you put enough fans at like a puddle of water, can you get ice? You know what I mean?
No.
Right?
Okay.
Well, because you're probably moving the water then at that point, so that's probably not a great
example. It would, yeah, water in motion would certainly require a even colder temperature in order to freeze, but it doesn't mean it can't freeze.
Is the air just colder because it's being, like, when you have wind chill, right?
Yes.
And the wind, like, when you get hit with the wind while it's cold outside, you are way colder.
But that's what they say. They say it feels like -7 degrees, but the actual temperature is 10 degrees.
No, that's a different thing.
That is a different thing?
No, there's wind chill, and then there's, like, feels like versus is. And I'm like, whatever it feels like is what it is, guys. Shut up.
Right, right. Yeah, I feel like whenever there is wind on a cold day, what it is doing is exposing you to more cold faster. So it's like how if it's raining and you run to your car, you get exactly the same amount of wet as if you walk to the car, right?
Oh, you are inviting all sorts of comments. This is such, I think there's a minute physics about this. There's a Mythbusters about this. I think there's a busting of the Mythbusters about this.
Oh, goodness.
I do not know the answer. At one point, I would have said that walking to your car would get you less wet than if you ran, because you're exposing less of your body to the rain. But of course, then you're in the rain longer. This is the question. But I guarantee you, we're going to hear from everyone about how that works.
Good.
Yeah.
And that's excellent.
Tell us, is it better to walk or run in the rain?
Is it better to walk? What do you do in the rain? Do you carry an umbrella? Because first of all, I do not carry an umbrella.
Oh, God, we could talk about umbrellas. I do not carry an umbrella.
Never. Do you have one in your car? Is there one in, like, the little pocket behind the seat?
Oh, there, I think there is, not a small umbrella, but a big umbrella in Beth's car. Because first of all, pocket umbrellas, things like that, just what do you, if you're gonna umbrella, I take the same approach as I do with bears. Like, you know, hey, if you're gonna be a bear, be a grizzly. You know, if you're gonna be an umbrella, be a grizzly. Be a grizzly. Be a grizzly bear and yell at the rain until it stops.
This episode of Popcorn Culture is brought to you by Grizzly Umbrella Company.
That's right.
Grizzly. Where we huge. The first ever 8-foot umbrella.
We promise it's different than beach umbrellas.
It is. It is.
These are for water.
It is made of bear-proof.
It is made of
tarp.
It is not only waterproof, but also bear-proof. Grizzly umbrellas, we huge.
we huge.
Oh my gosh, someone needs to make us some graphic designs for our grizzly umbrellas. No, I don't carry umbrellas. I very frequently, if I think it's going to rain, I'll wear something that has a hood. Or I'm a much bigger believer in rain jackets than umbrellas.
Okay, I would agree with you 100. So I think that rain jackets are, especially where we live in the world, like they're kind of strangely expensive jackets for something that have no insulative properties whatsoever.
Right.
Like you are literally wearing an umbrella.
You're just wearing a waterproof shell.
Yeah. You're wearing a shirt-shaped umbrella. It is like, yeah, just water repellent. But one of the most useful things living where we live, like I would say that I wear my rain jacket more days a year than any other jacket that I own.
Oh, do you?
I believe that would be accurate.
Hmm.
It does help that I can layer my rain jacket, which if you're in the market for a rain jacket, a technical shell, then it's handy because you can like wear like a hoodie underneath it. And then it's kind of like wearing a big jacket because
right.
It's both windproof, waterproof, and then insulated by your nice puffy soft sweater underneath. Mm.
What yeah. I wear is bearskin.
actual bearskin.
No, I don't. I too just have a rain jacket that I wear. Because you know what the massive advantage of a rain jacket versus...
Over bearskin?
There's no advantages over bearskin, Ben. That's obviously top of the line no matter what. No matter what situation
when,
you're in.
When given the choice, take bearskin.
When given the choice. Rain or no rain, you know, just... it's you probably want it. But the massive advantage of rain jackets over umbrellas is that you don't have to carry them. And they
yes.
are much harder to forget places. Because I would wager that umbrellas are the most forgettable items you own.
It almost seems like just literally, given the number of umbrellas that exist in the world, everybody could just start leaving them everywhere.
Mm.
Like at all times. Like all umbrellas are communal umbrellas. Like
that, ooh, yes. I have thought that before too. All umbrellas are communal umbrellas.
Right. Yeah, so if you get somewhere and it's raining, and then when you're getting ready to leave, it's no longer raining, you just leave it there. And if we all do this enough times, then anywhere you go, there will always be umbrellas. Because a known fact, off the top of my head, 99.87% of all umbrellas are lost. Umbrellas.
That has been my experience.
I don't know that I've ever, actually, this is not true because of just recently, I intentionally went out and bought a clear umbrella because Allie wanted one.
Mm.
But prior to that umbrella, I had never purchased an umbrella other than our umbrella company, Grizzly Umbrellas.
This is...
They huge.
That... we huge.
We huge.
That is an interesting development in the umbrella world, I think. Is
Big
that,
umbrella?
Is that they have become like a fashion, like part of your fashion.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Like I think at one point, most umbrellas were all function. And someone somewhere was like, but what if also... it was part of yo look.
Yo look.
Yo
in
look.
Which case, clear is the acceptable solution. And maybe it's more domey than you might expect. Like more like a toadstool or something, well, you know? Like they,
yeah.
They I don't know how to describe it using only words.
Yeah. Well, because the way it works is they're so domed, right, that you walk under it and look through the umbrella.
Right.
That's how it's supposed to go.
Oh, my God. I did not ever think of that. That is the point of a clear umbrella.
I think
is
that's
you can
the point,
see through it.
But it's also pretty trendy and cool looking.
It is very cool looking. I do have to agree.
I think it comes with, like, windshield wipers?
It should.
It should. Yeah.
Goodness. Hey, what is the point of windshield wipers on headlights? Like, have you ever
what?
Seen this? Some Volvo station wagons, specifically,
what?
Have windshield wipers. On their little headlights.
That's just breakable parts.
It is just
that's breakable just parts.
I truly and genuinely do not understand.
That is
how.
No.
Like I think that this is a thing.
Is it raining mud?
It could
maybe
be.
Maybe if you're driving through a muddy street.
Hang on.
But you know what? I really don't think you're driving through like such a dirty road that's gonna like kick up so much dirt that it's going to block your vision. That's ridiculous. That it's going to block your headlights in a Volvo.
Okay, so I just showed Jay a picture. It does in fact exist, and it is on Volvo specifically. But for a period of time, they had windshield wipers on their headlights.
As I've thought about it for 30 more seconds now, I suppose there is an argument where if you live in a place where there's lots of snow on the ground and lots of salt, that driving behind people could kick up enough gunk that it might hinder. Okay, so that's what they're going for. Yep. However, I will say also that what is the one thing you do when you know it's going to snow with your windshield wipers is you got to like pop them up.
Why do people do that? So they don't get frozen to the windshield?
They don't get frozen. Frozen in the windshield. It seems to me that if you're in such a place where you have this problem, it's also by definition too cold for your windshield wipers on your headlights to function.
That seems likely.
And in the meantime, you look stupid.
It's so funny though. I do the like every time I know it's gonna snow, I'll go out and like I'll like lift the windshield wipers off of the car.
Yeah.
And it's like something that I do because I feel like it makes me look knowledgeable about pending weather. But I feel like most frequently. My complaint with this particular solution to problems is that there is just ice frozen to my windshield anyway. So even when I put them down, it's not helpful.
Do you think everyone's doing it because everyone's doing it and nobody knows why?
I'm sort of thinking that. Thinking like, and I'm sure that people up north are going to email us and be like, it makes a huge difference. You must do it. Don't be crazy.
Don't be crazy, Northerners. We know you don't know why you're doing it either.
Maybe.
This is also, we're also going to get emails from like people in Seattle who are like, you must have a good umbrella.
And, oh, yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. Well, places where,
London, where rain is a huge part of the culture.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's such an odd thing to think about. Rain is.
Were we talking about a statistic one day where like apparently it rains over 50% of the days where we live?
Is that accurate?
I don't know.
It's okay. I feel like growing up, I would have thought we had like thunderstorms. Which I'm going to say and complain about, I don't think we have nearly as many thunderstorms as we used to.
Oh, I feel like when we were kids, we had quality thunderstorms.
We had the swing on the front porch. Remember the green front porch?
Yeah, Ben, of course, I remember the green front porch. Sit out there and eat Chili Willies.
Chili Willies.
Yeah.
Hey, that's something that I think people across the country probably pronounce differently.
Oh, yeah. Some of them are going to be like Chili Williams. Some of them are going to be like Chili Willikers. None of those rhyme as well.
Freezy Pops.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Around the country, sound off. Around the world, even. What we're calling Chili Willies, the appropriate title, you might also know as Freezy Pops or
Flavo-ice?
Flavor-ice.
Oh, Flavor-ice, yes.
Even that is like, I say it Flavor-ice because they break it up, FLA.VOR.ice, but just Flavor-ice.
Flavor-ice.
Yeah.
Brilliant title. That is always one of those where it's like, you know what we should sell? Kool-Aid in a tube and you freeze it.
Yeah, that's pretty much. So yeah, if you don't know what we're talking about, it's that tube of sugar water that's frozen in your freezer right now.
Yeah.
And it comes in blue and all the other colors that aren't as good as blue.
This is one of those strange areas where I actually like grape.
No!
The purple one.
Ben.
I do like the purple one. Also, do you remember when we were kids, we would finish these off and there would be like a little bit of liquid left in the bottom, which is the best part.
That is the best part.
And what we would do is literally like eat like 19 of these on like a hot summer's day, take all of the leftover fluid at the bottom and pour it into a cup, and then we would like drink.
Oh, I don't remember this.
This might have been a me and Tyler thing.
Maybe it was a you and Tyler thing.
But like we would like literally, and we would like kind of like hold the flavor ice with like two hands, like try to melt more of it to get
absolutely
more,
yeah,
you know, like realistically what we could have done is just gone and got like 7 of them, laid them on the sidewalk, waited 20 minutes, and then like had an entire cup full of
never occurred to me
sugar water.
Yeah,
but no, instead we would eat so many of them so that we could like harvest the last little dregs,
yeah,
you know, in the bottom of the plastic tube.
My memory of these things, other than, yeah, whenever it thunderstormed, we'd go out and sit on the porch swing with our mom and watch the thunderstorm and eat Chili Willies, the appropriate title for them. And I remember specifically, we would specifically never eat the orange ones because we were under the impression that was our dad's favorite. So we'd leave those for him.
That's so true.
And I have no idea if that's actually true or if we just thought that. And he was like, man, I never get any blues.
The blues. The best flavor.
I'm stuck with the orange ones.
That is so funny because I'm sure even as I'm like your kids get older, I'd be willing to bet that something like that happens.
Oh, for sure.
Eventually.
Yeah, they're like, they're doing something out of kindness to you, and they're just wrong.
Okay, okay. So I'm going to play a game with you, because I bet we also know our parents' favorite candies based on our childhood perceptions that I think this is more true, but I bet you and I can both name mom's favorite candy if we go 3, 2, 1, say okay. it at the same time, and dad's favorite candy, 3, 2, 1, say at the same time.
Okay, let's do mom's first.
Do you think you can do this?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. All right, ready? So mom's?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1.
Almond Joy.
Nice!
Yeah.
Yeah, this is such a thing. I feel like for every Mother's Day, mom's birthday, Christmas, whatever, they're always Almond Joys.
Yes.
I feel like it was something that like would have felt like thoughtful to be like, we gotta make sure.
Are these snowball candies? Did they snowball gift into them?
It was like casually her favorite, but then right. like she actually ended up like just, it became like she part of her brand.
Right. Ooh, maybe. I don't know.
We'll have to ask
What if her.
Her
actual favorite candy isn't Almond Joys?
That and would she's break never my, told us.
I could never.
She's like, I hate them.
I know that can't be true.
I know that. Yeah. I know that because at the very least, growing up every year for what we now call Isla Manfavia Day, formerly Valentine's Day, mom would give us, do you remember the Whitman samplers?
Oh, Whitman samplers. Yeah.
It's like the 2-layer chocolate sampler box.
Ben, I remember to this day the elation and the mind blowingness of realizing there was a whole second layer to the Whitman sampler.
Yes.
And it was like the best thing ever.
Exactly. It's like when you're looking at the size of the box, it is obvious
yeah.
that there's more going on than the
yeah.
top layer.
Mm-hmm.
But no, like, so you finish it, you get a peel off this like, you know, plastic flimsy tray, you set it aside with like the cherry cordial still inside of it. And then you pick up the little foam packed paper thing to reveal a fresh set of candies.
But the thing is, it'd be very easy to just finish the top layer, and there'd be no reason to just take the top layer off.
True.
You know, you could very easily finish it and be like, well, I guess I'm done, and throw it out. And I think that's probably what happened to me. It was like, well, I guess all my candy's gone. And then I discovered after that, like, you haven't even started.
You're only halfway there.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Goodness gracious. Okay, now I wonder, do you know dad's favorite candy?
I believe so.
Okay, okay.
Okay.
3, 2, 1.
Reese's.
Yeah, nice. Okay.
Absolutely.
This is another thing. I've gotten so many emails. Apparently, we say it wrong.
Or
maybe we said it wrong.
We said it wrong. We said
Reese's.
Reese's.
And people get frustrated because there's a candy called Reese's Pieces. No.
It's Reese's.
Realized that I'm saying it wrong, even though the reason I'm saying it wrong is because, wow.
Yeah, man. I had this exact realization. I was like, no. Everyone says Reese's because it rhymes with PCs. And PCs isn't a word.
It's definitely Pieces.
It's definitely Reese's Pieces.
Okay, so is Reese the name of a person out there somewhere?
I think Reese, God bless him, must have been the person who invented peanut butter and chocolate in cup form. And these are Reese's peanut butter cups.
Possessive.
Yes.
Okay, I see. That is amazing. I have a funny story about Reese's growing up. I was basically the world's biggest chicken as a child. I was afraid.
You?
Me, yes.
Hmm.
I was afraid of everything. Mom had to come get me at my first sleepover because I couldn't make it through the night. I had all these problems about going to camps and stuff because I was always so like afraid. I remember one year at ski school. I wasn't actually sick, but I insisted I was sick so that dad would come pick me up, which I'm sure was the most frustrating thing in the world because he finally got to go skiing and he put us in ski school so he didn't have to deal with us.
Yeah.
And I'm like sitting there with like my cup of styrofoam hot chocolate and I'm like, I need my dad to come get me. And of course, like, they're on the slopes where to this day, this is 20 years ago, to this day there is still not cell service on Snowshoe Mountain.
Yeah.
So like, there's people like at the top of the lift lines like asking for John Carlin.
Oh gosh.
So that like they could finally find a way to like get him back to me because I was so afraid. But, interestingly, this story also has to do with skiing, but of a different variety.
Okay.
So, do you remember water skiing when we were kids up in Lake Champlain, Vermont?
Absolutely.
Okay. Familiar with it? I was there. It was my childhood, too.
Yeah.
I have to ask you these questions to prompt you into, you know, me setting up the story. So,
set the scene. Paint me a word picture, Ben.
Do you remember our shared memories? Of course you do. I'm asking you a redundant question. So when we were kids, though, our family has this small cabin on Lake Champlain in Vermont. and you had started water skiing, which just terrified me. Like, oh my gosh. Like, I remember when you were out there, I was just so afraid that you were going to get hurt. And I was like so worried for you that like, I couldn't watch and I was so scared. And I was like, if he falls, like, this is going to be the end. Like, and, like I'm like...
I do not remember you being such like a chicken.
Oh my gosh, but I was. Kid. I was. It was so bad. It was so bad. And I think that like, I think that I was empathizing with what I thought must have been your fear. Mm. Like, I was like, well, he's terrified, surely. And so I was feeling the full force of my perception of your fear that wasn't real. Ah. I think. Unless you were scared. Were you scared?
No, I was not afraid of water skiing itself. What I always disliked about the process of learning to water ski, specifically at our little like cove there, was that we'd always start like right next to the dock, and like it was always just right above a bed of seaweed.
Yes.
And that was the part I didn't like, because there's it's such a terrible feeling when you're in the water and there is seaweed touching your legs.
Oh, all the way.
There's no way to feel like it's not a lake monster, or, and it's like, you know, it's not. And you know, you're trying to communicate to the boat, like, I don't want to be above the seaweed. And of course, if you're in the boat and you're the parent, you're like, what? Shut up. You know, the parent, the seaweed is not a problem, you know, deal with it. But yeah, I don't remember being afraid of water skiing itself.
Okay. Well, I was scared out of my wits. And we had these like trainer skis that had like a little like notch that like, you know, made it so your legs couldn't like
the cool cats.
Yeah, the cool cats. Yeah. That was the name of the skis.
That was the name of the trainer skis.
So your legs couldn't come apart.
Right.
And mom was like, she's like, Ben, I really want you to try it. Like, I think you need to get out there. I think you need to be in the water. You need to hold on and you're going to pop right up. And I think that she saw it as like this teaching moment of like if I can just get him to do it, then he will like get over this fear.
Mm-hmm.
and he'll stop being such a scaredy cat of a little kid.
Mm-hmm. Like not just here, but in many situations.
It's like, it's become a real problem.
I can always point to the water skiing.
He's always afraid of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so mom was like, Ben, if you do this, you can get 10 candy bars.
Wow.
From Wags.
Wow. Yep. Bribery.
Yep. West Addison General Store. Still open to this day.
Wags.
And so I was like, no way, 10?
10. Wow.
10.
Wow.
And it's like ears perked up. Right. And this is, I think mom figured this out about me as a child, is that I was terrified of everything, but with the right motivation.
Your courage was for sale.
My courage was for sale. Absolutely. Like, and I think my brain has these like totally incongruent rationalization factors that are like coming into play here, where it's like 10 candy bars and I'm willing to face mortal danger.
That is hilarious. I would also, I think, and maybe you should talk to mom about this, but I believe that there might be more to the to that particular situation from our mother's point of view, because I'm pretty sure that, you know, maybe even before we were born, when her and dad would go up there, she wanted to learn how to water ski. And I want to say it was not easy for her, and that it took her like close to 30 tries behind the boat, and the handle got like, you know, slammed into the back of her legs several times as the boat was trying to pull her up, and she had like bruises on her legs.
Oh goodness. I did not know this.
But eventually she got it, and you know, she liked doing it.
Yes.
And stuff. So I would bet that water skiing in particular is something our mom internalized as a, you can absolutely get over this with enough effort.
Like if you try. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I can see that. Yeah. I can see that, because I have had those same moments in my life where it's like, I know that right now you're standing on this side of can't do it, but I also know that I couldn't do it, and then I tried and I tried and I tried and it worked.
Right.
And then once I got there, it was like, okay,
yeah,
you're on the other side of the fence now, you understand.
Yes.
Anyway, so I tried twice. I weighed like 13 pounds.
Yeah.
And so I basically shot clean out of the water.
Yeah. Your body weight has a lot to do with how easy it is to get up on water skis.
Yes.
Versus
yes.
The engine's power on the boat, which I'm gonna tell you, our boat wasn't very fast.
It was not very fast. We still have the same boat.
Same boat. I think our grandfather is willing it to life.
I think he is. I mean, yeah. I think genuinely he bought it in like 1973. It's a Glastron. And I don't even know how many years old. I can't do quick enough mental math on the fly.
It's like 50 years old.
Yeah, it's really old.
Yeah.
But I used it like last year to go water skiing.
Yeah.
Which I couldn't convince anybody to do, by the way.
What?
Nobody would do it with me.
That is flabbergasting to
flabbergasting.
Me.
Flabbergasting.
To me...
I even offered them 10 candy bars.
Did you actually?
Yes, I did. Actually, I told this exact story. No one would do it.
That's amazing. I feel like that's crazy to me because as a kid, the main allure of this trip to Vermont every year was the promise of water skiing.
Yeah.
Like that was like the thing I wanted to do every single day. So like, as which is weird because as an adult, I still want to go water skiing. But I would say like fishing eventually took over as the key activity.
Sure.
But
sure.
As a kid, for sure, that was all I could think about.
Hey, do you remember Pete and Steve?
Oh, yeah. I remember Pete and Steve. Ben, there was also... there's this dinghy. No, it's what is it? The blue boat or the dinghy? Yeah, it was the blue boat.
It was the blue boat.
So this is even smaller than the Glastron. There's just sort of this like single prop, tiny.
It's a rowboat with a prop.
It's basically. A rowboat with a propeller, basically. Yeah. It's, I don't know, 12 feet long.
Sure.
Sure.
Seems like a good number.
Yeah. There's three built-in benches. It's got a live well in the center bench. Anyway, but Ben and I are, there's like two points off the cove where the cabin is located, and this is like the first year ever where Ben and I we're out in the boat by ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really, really determined that we're going to catch some big bass. And we're like, just like, I don't know. I feel like we were just in a fishing zone. And we had also had that we were fishing with grubs, which were like scented or something. And I think we were like, these are gold. These are going to work. And so we were just, you know, cast it and reel it back in. But we were like determined. We're absolutely going to catch a big fish. And both of us did.
Yeah. And yeah. They were called Pete and Steve because we were doing the way we kept up with how many fish we had caught was by naming each fish based on the letter of the alphabet.
Yeah, so the first fish you caught might be like Adam, and the second fish you caught would be like Bartholomew. And, you know, so then you could keep track of how many fish you caught based on how far into the alphabet you got.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So Pete and Steve were pretty far in.
Yeah, they were pretty far in, but they was big.
They was big.
It was big bass.
It was very, very exciting back in those days. Because I do, yeah, I think you're exactly right. It's almost like the way that, like, you can play, like, a video game and then realize it's 5 o'clock in the morning or something. Mm-hmm. You're like, wow, like, we have been sitting here and playing this for a long time. I feel like we just went out and we were just out there for hours.
Right.
Like fishing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that was like a turning point in that vacation.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fun. I still remember that for sure. I also, going back to water skiing.
Okay.
I want to see if maybe you have any skills of this variety, because when it comes to water skiing, I think most people would ski on one ski. Like that's really water skiing, like slalom.
Right.
Or
yeah,
you might learn on two.
I don't know. I wonder if there even is competitive water skiing that involves, being on two skis.
Interesting.
Because it doesn't seem like there'd be, I feel like there's too much maneuverability gained by one ski.
Yeah. So I remember I went to like a Boy Scout camp where water skiing, I think, was one of the merit badges you could like earn in like, you know, earn inside of a week at this camp. That's what Boy Scout camps are. You can earn like six things at once. But they had water skiing. And so rather than have every kid fail at getting up on one ski, because most people hadn't skied at all, they'd have you drop a ski.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Mid ride. And
what that means is like you're standing on both skis, and then as you're skiing and the boat is motoring on in front of you, and the ice cold 67 degree Champlain water splashing up in your face, you literally take one foot just out of one ski,
right,
and leave it. And then you take your other foot and position it very carefully in the grommet behind your front foot.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So you are going along with two. You just lift your foot and the one ski will just fly off behind you.
Yeah, it's gone.
It's gone. I mean, you need like a spotter on the boat and you should signal, I'm about to do this because it's going to be easy to miss.
And do it somewhere near where you might like return the boat. Like don't do it out in the middle of nowhere.
Right, right, right. So there's that. But I feel like this is a skill that like, maybe it was because our boat wasn't very strong, so it was really hard to get up on one ski behind it. But I feel like this is a skill I am weirdly good at. to this day where I can still just drop a ski. But if I was like at like a party or something where there was water skiing, I'd be like, can I get up on two and drop one? Like, I feel like that would be real lame.
Like that's not like an acceptable way to go about doing this particular thing.
But even doing it is kind of hard.
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like there's a bit of a party trick involved, I think, with being able to drop ski. That's what I still do to this day. I don't think I've ever gotten up on one ski before. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And try as I might. But yeah, no, this I'm right there with you. I mean, I water ski about one day every 2 years.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. We don't have ready access to boats.
Right, right, yet.
Or yet.
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 Maybe that's what the podcast will become. This is the boat fund.
This is Jay, the boat fund.
I conned you into it. Yeah. I got 10 episodes in, and I finally brought up my true motive, the boat fund.
The boat fund.
Now I just have to find a way to monetize it.
Yeah, yeah.
Grizzly Umbrellas. Again, use promo code Grizzly.
We huge.
We huge. No, so I have had these moments all throughout my life where I swear to you, I died.
You died?
Where I died.
Okay.
Like, I have these like these specific moments that I can go back to where I am convinced that my current living existence is a elaborate part of like the parallel universes wherein I have always lived.
Ah.
Because the circumstances all but suggest that I died.
Okay, so what's happening is every time you're in a dangerous situation in which you do die, the reality in which you don't die takes over as your main reality.
As my main reality. Okay. Exactly. Yeah, okay.
So interesting view.
you have mourned my loss many times.
But my reality is always the one where you survive.
It's true. It's true. Well, this version of you, of course. Yeah. There are many other versions of you that are so sad.
Oh,
so the most sad.
Those guys.
Okay. Three of them. One of them, I was learning to do an inward dive on a diving board. All these have to do with water, weirdly.
Maybe you should stay on land. Maybe you're a land person.
Maybe my original fear as a child was like forewarning, like water is not your friend. This is not where you belong.
Meanwhile, Ben's like, aquariums, dude. That's my livelihood.
Right, exactly. Yeah. An inward dive is where you go and you stand on the end of the diving board like you're going to do a backflip. You jump backwards and then actually like turn your head towards the diving board and do a dive.
Mm.
It's kind of tricky to do. The first time I ever did it, I smacked my face on the board and died in that reality.
Ow!
I'm 100% sure it had to have happened. I saw the board coming at me. I didn't hit it. I didn't even get hit. I don't know what happened, but I swear to you, I don't know what happened. Even as a like 10-year-old kid, I was like, that's not right.
Oh, I have one of these moments also to do with water.
Okay, can we hear it?
Absolutely. So, yeah. I feel bad even telling the story.
Uh-oh.
So
is it embarrassing me?
It's no, it's not embarrassing you. It's just not good role modeling.
Oh, that's
I'll
okay.
Just say
okay,
that.
So let's forewarn poor role modeling.
Poor
ahead.
Role modeling. Do not attempt at home. Shouldn't have attempted then. But so we're at our friend's house. He has a pool in his backyard and he's got a diving board. And I want to say his parents weren't there and we might have had an alcoholic beverage.
One.
What? You know.
We said warning. It's okay. It's okay.
So my judgment's not great. Not at its at peak. And go off the diving board and I'm not sure. Are you familiar with I don't know if this is what it's actually called, but as a kid, we always called this just a suicide dive.
Okay, were you...
Aptly named.
Yeah, you basically jump and you don't put your hands above your head, like in a traditional diving formation. You dive, like, head first.
Dive head first, arms at side.
I have no idea why it was called that, or if we invented that title.
I know why it was called that, because if you hit the ground that way, under the water...
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
You're going to get hurt real bad.
You're going to get hurt real bad. So anyway, I do this. I jump in, and the pool, as many backyard pools do, it has a shallow end, there's the hill, and then there's a deep end.
Right.
So I'm aiming right at the hill. And I'm pretty convinced in some other reality I died. Because I'm going through the air, but in the reality I remember, what happened was that I brought my hands up at the moment I hit the water, and I must have stopped. Like, it doesn't physically make sense how it could have happened, but I just brought my hands up to my head and stopped all momentum and just completely froze myself in the water before I hit the ground.
What?
I have no idea. I'm like, that was not smart. I was so close.
Something just did a physics on me.
Something just did a physics and I don't understand it, but that was dangerous. So the moral of the story is you should not mix alcohol and pools.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah. Good call.
Unfortunately for my next story.
Oh God.
I don't even have the excuse of impaired judgment.
Oh, this was voluntary.
Voluntary being dumb.
Okay.
Okay. So we were, the very brief backstory to it is that in high school, we would do our cross country camp every year at Appalachian State University.
Yeah.
Which is in Boone, North Carolina. And we would go down there, and after our last day, longest run, there was this really gorgeous waterfall that we would all go, and it was like a swimming hole, and you could go and like swim around the water.
Oh, I know where you're talking.
Yeah. It's called Elk River Falls.
Tell the people where it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell the people how to get there, Ben.
On Route 3, you just gotta take a right at the stop sign, and you're there. No, I'm kidding. None of that is true. Other than the existence of the waterfall and everything I'm about to say. So our coach, strangely, would never let us jump off the 50-foot rock.
Ridiculous.
I know. Yeah. Insane. What's up with that? So needless to say, as soon as we graduated, we went back without him and did it.
Right. Turns out we have cars.
Yeah.
And directions.
And directions. We MapQuested it.
Yeah. Ooh, MapQuest. Remember MapQuest?
Yeah, I remember MapQuest. Yeah. The worst. Google Maps is so much better.
Google Maps is so much better, but in its day, MapQuest. You had to print it out.
You did.
Right? You had to print it out. And I remember this about MapQuest. All they really needed was the word, and then do this.
Yeah.
Because it was always, I feel like it was very unclear. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, MapQuest. Anyway, that was before you had like a little dot that actually showed you relative to your surroundings where you were.
Yeah.
You know, you were just like, where is Route 17?
Yes.
Yeah. I guess I'll just keep driving until I do or do not see it.
Right.
Yeah, so that was MapQuest. So we went back. We jumped off the 50-foot waterfall, no problem. All good. We were all very healthy, got away from it. Do not recommend doing it. But then we found another waterfall called... It's either Twisted Falls or Compression Falls, depending on your search engine. And it's a really cool spot where you can like ride like a 12-foot like waterfall that then like drops off to like an 18-foot drop into like nice, calm, nice, deep water.
Lovely. And if that's all you want to go down there and do, great way to spend your afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah. Total
super
delight.
Super fun.
Somewhere along the way, though, I started doing backflips off things.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this became a bit of like a Ben Carlin signature was the backflip.
Mm.
And so as like, you know, it'd be like, oh, let's see if we can backflip off this, you know, like 5-foot rock, 10-foot rock, 25-foot rock. And then finally, we find this like obscure outcropping.
Yeah.
Like, and I kid you not, a legitimate, like, I mean, I was jumping into a canal that was maybe 30 feet wide, from 50 feet, and I get up there, and every other time I've done a backflip, it was just sort of like, once I'm in the air, I'll know what to do. I'll know what to do. And so like my palms are sweating. I'm like, gonna do this. Everyone's gonna think it's so cool, and I'm gonna have backflip from this insane height. Well, I jump off the rock backwards. I'm in the air. I rotate, and then another half rotate.
Right.
And then I hit water.
Mm.
Like, my full body is like totally spread out across my back, and I like backflop from 50 feet.
Yeah, it was bad.
It was bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like I think I hit the water, and I couldn't have gone more than like 3 feet underwater because like my surface area was so spread out that that's how much the impact like had slowed me down.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, wham. And the only person who's up in this area with me is the one guy with us who has a torn ACL.
Oh,
and so he's like,
he can't do anything.
Yeah. So I come up and I'm like, wind completely knocked out of me in water. I'm like, help. You know?
Yeah.
And at this point in time, I have no idea if I've broken every bone in my body or what. Fortunately, I didn't.
Yeah.
No,
you were just in severe pain.
Severe pain. I think every single muscle in my body, though, was like so inflamed that the next day I woke up and I was just like sore everywhere.
Mm.
It was like I had done like 400 lunges on every single muscle I had. And
I remember because I watched you do this maneuver.
thank you. Maneuver, very, very kind way to put it.
Yeah. So, and it was like, so yeah, you had like Twisted Falls at one level, and then you could like climb some rocks, and there was this little basin you could swim in, and then you could climb some rocks, and that's where you landed. And then I was like way down at Twisted Falls, sort of like two tiers down.
Yeah.
Just watching this happen. So I see you, I can't even see you hit the water. I just see you go beneath my line of sight and just hear the smack.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, ooh. It was like, I totally had that fear, like, wow, ooh, something bad might have just
right,
happened.
May have just witnessed, like, that moment.
Mm-hmm. That'd have been really bad.
And so I was just like, I don't know. I mean, it makes me, like, I relive this moment sometimes.
Yeah.
like when I'm just driving down the road. Like I'll literally just be like spaced out thinking about whatever, and I will like relive the moment of impact.
Ugh,
and it's just
so terrible.
It is so terrible. It's so scary, which is why I'm so convinced that I died that day. And I'm so sorry for that reality of you. Just absolutely, absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
Which brings me to my third. That's the most eventful.
That's the most eventful.
That's the most eventful. But the third one brings us back to water skiing.
Oh gosh.
Because this one is just cringy.
Why is it always water?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Dude, I think back on some of the just absolutely stupid things that we did as teenagers, and I'm like, God, I hope Luke doesn't do that stuff.
Right? Yeah, right?
It's, we were, like, it was always you and me and then our two buddies, and the fact that all four of us made it out of all of our stupid adventures together, just completely unharmed, is really, really unbelievable.
It kind of breaks the laws of remarkability a little bit.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on. Tell your deadly water skiing story.
It's a good one. Don't you worry. Okay. So I'm in Vermont again as an adult. And at this point in time, it's just like me and my friends up there on vacation. And there is one day where we have a drone now, like where we like kind of picked up some camera equipment doing our YouTube channel. And our dad has asked me like so many times, like, you have to get drone footage of somebody water skiing behind the boat, because it's this really old boat that our grandpa has like painstakingly kept in shape for so long so that we can literally go up there and do exactly this.
Right.
So he's like, I really, really, really want you to make sure you get video of you water skiing so that we can send it to grandpa. And I was like, okay, perfect. I taught Alice how to drive the drone. I taught my friend Steven how to drive the boat, you know, and like I've done like all these things. I have like a lookout on the boat, so like if I fall, someone knows all the stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm out there and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna drop my ski.
Okay. So,
yeah. Because, you know, I mean, like, that's cool.
So cool.
So the coolest.
So cool.
So we're circling back. The drone has like, I've just like heard it like fly overhead because drones are kind of like loud and everything. And so I go to like, you know, let my ski off in front of the dock. It goes out. I start getting speed wobbles.
Oh, so I know what you're talking about.
Like my like right leg is still in the front ski and it's like wiggling back and forth like super quick. And I'm like trying to like plant my left foot. Totally can't do it. The rope that I'm holding onto, the tow rope, is like a handle that makes like a triangle to a center point that, you know, then goes to the back
of
the boat.
Goes back to the boat.
Okay. I flip out of my front ski and I swear in the parallel universe, my head went into the triangle.
Oh, that'd be real bad.
The worst.
Yeah.
It makes me so upset to think about, but I'm like, I don't know how it didn't happen. I don't know how it didn't happen because like, it's the last thing I saw before I hit the water was this triangle.
Coming straight at your face.
Coming straight at my face. Yeah. So anyway, now that people are never going to listen to the anxiety inducing Ben Carlin again.
I know.
That's
gosh.
My stage name.
Yeah. Thanks so much for telling this story.
No probs.
Yeah.
Happy to do it. Yeah. Those are my three moments in life that I can go back to.
Almost died.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Thanks for sharing.
No problem. Everybody needed to be clued in on it. I feel like there's nothing better than this particular avenue for me to tell these stories in the intricate detail that is necessary. Like the drone, why is that relevant to that story? It just is. I have it on videotape.
You have it on videotape where you didn't fall through the triangle.
Well, did I though?
There's an alternate drone out there with some very disturbing footage, apparently.
Oh, no. That would be so...
so terrible.
The worst.
Oh, no.
The worst.
I don't want to think about it. Even at all.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay.
We need a happier topic.
We do. Okay.
Yeah.
So, moving on from that. One thing from last week's episode that seemingly everyone and their brother mentioned that I did that apparently was very noteworthy is, you know when you go to the grocery store?
Yeah.
You know how you have this cage on wheels that you should drive around
on about three wheels, yeah.
One of them's like spins in circles.
Yeah.
Okay. In the last episode, I referred to this particular object as a buggy.
Ah, not a shopping cart.
And not a shopping cart.
Mm-hmm.
What I have discovered is that while we had just asked in that episode whether or not we have accents, like if we have like a southern accent.
Right.
And so everybody was like, no, you guys don't have accents. Or occasionally someone was like, oh, you guys use like a long O.
Right.
Which is particularly indicative of a southern accent. They said the number one thing that made me sound southern was referring to a shopping cart as a buggy.
What's interesting, it's so funny. Yeah, you're right. We got tons of feedback about you just saying the word buggy. But what I think is funny is that I don't even think that's normally what you say.
It's not.
I was like, Ben's not a buggy person. He says shopping cart like you're supposed to.
Like, okay, except for, look, I have a heat map of the United States in
I'm
front of me.
At it.
Yeah, the heat map suggests that in basically the South, with the exception of Florida, people will refer to it, and as West as Texas, people will refer to it as a buggy. And basically the Midwest, the West Coast, and what is the
Florida.
North? In Florida. It's called a shopping cart. But then get this, and I need to know if this is real because I have never heard of that. I've heard buggy and shopping cart. Apparently, up in New England, they refer to this particular object as a wagon or carriage.
That's bananas. Okay, look at let me just go ahead and talk to this map real quick.
Talk at it.
Okay, here we go. First of all, I don't think anyone calls it a wagon or a carriage. That's made up. And even though I've heard people say buggy, that's also the wrong answer. It's a shopping cart.
It's a shopping cart.
And I will, there's no. I don't want to hit, people are going to be like, oh no, it's buggy and it's pop. And it's like, oh God.
This is... Strong opinions about things that don't matter.
Strong opinions about things that don't matter. It's called a shopping cart. This map is so wrong. I don't know anyone in Virginia. This map, at least, denotes Virginia as a buggy state.
It does.
I don't know anyone who says buggy, because that's not what they're called. And also, I would have thought that maybe, based on this map, like, oh, we must say, if in fact Virginia is a buggy state and we say shopping cart, it's probably because our parents are from up north and they grew up with shopping cart.
Sure.
But alas, this map would also say that where they are from is a wagon slash carriage thing, which makes me have no faith in this map at all.
No faith?
No faith.
But Jay, I found this on Google Images.
Yeah, so that's super reliable.
Okay, yeah. So like anything else, now I'm super curious to know. Well, not so much whether or not you call it a buggy or a shopping cart, which, by the way, when I was saying it, I think even as I was like describing my story, a part of me was thinking that I wanted to describe the thing I was backing into as a car. And then I sort of got like, I couldn't decide whether or not the thing I would be backing into was a fellow car or somebody with a shopping cart. And for some reason, my mind grabbed buggy out of like the deep, dark archives of words I never say.
Right.
Which I have a whole folder in my brain space dedicated to words I never say.
Right.
And my hand went straight in there and came up with a folder.
Came out with buggy.
Buggy! I held it in the air and
Set it on the internet.
Set it on the internet. Now everybody knows. But what I really need to know is whether or not you call it anything other than a buggy or a shopping cart. Because I have at least heard those two, but wagon slash carriage, both of those things, unless people are literally dragging them behind them, like I'm imagining people walking in with like a leather, almost like weightlifting belt that has a hitch that they literally like attach to the cart and then drag the cart behind them as a wagon or carriage.
Look, if it's a wagon, then it needs to be pulled. Like, if you're calling it a wagon, then your shopping cart needs to have a handle upon... Then you primarily need to be moving it about by pulling rather than pushing.
Can you...
And if that is what is happening in your stores, feel free to call it a wagon. If you're calling it a carriage, it needs to have horses.
Horses?
Yeah. And I don't think many shop... I don't know, but I don't think many grocery stores come with horses. So that's where I'm at.
It would be kind of remarkable if there was a grocery store that was like, horse, right here?
Yeah.
Choose your carriage?
Yeah.
One of the wheels doesn't work?
It's the same problem. It doesn't matter that you've changed vehicles altogether and are shopping out of an actual Oregon Trail wagon carriage.
It's way too big of a cart. It's
way too big. The aisles are massive, but still only three wheels work.
Right. And one of them is just freely spinning in all different directions.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure I'm going to address this because since I mentioned it at all, I'm sure people are going to talk about it. Is the words people use to describe soda around the country.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of people will, a carbonated beverage, a Coca-Cola.
Some people do call it Coca-Cola.
So I know that in the South, people will say that they call all sodas Coke, regardless of whether or not they actually want a Coca-Cola. I think, and then in like the Midwest, they say pop.
Yeah, I'm looking up. Pulling up a heat map right now. Yeah. Okay, so pop, soda, Coke, or other is the options that this map is giving me. Yeah.
Okay. Let me just say that to this day, when people refer to soda as, could you get me a pop out of the fridge? That to me is them trying to make a joke. Like, I don't believe anyone says pop seriously. Even I know people are gonna fight back hard on this, but I feel like they are like fighting for a cultural identity. but they're still not using the right word, and that it is a complete intentional joke.
So for some reason to me, pop seems like something that you would have got in the 1920s or something. Like, it almost feels like whimsically dated, like on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what it is. It's whimsically dated.
Like, you would go to a soda bar for a pop.
Right. Right. If you went to a soda bar, you could order a pop. But if I'm like...
Which is funny because we call it a soda bar.
Right.
To order a pop.
Exactly. Not a pop bar.
To order a soda.
Where you order soda water and sugar. Yeah. Soda bars. Not even a thing.
Not even a thing.
They must exist somewhere.
Actually, but I do think there's a kind of sort of soda bar. It's a non-alcoholic bar opening in Roanoke.
Right. Now, see, for like, now when people say they call it Coke, I feel like I'm even more willing to give that a pass in the, because the Coca-Cola headquarters is in Atlanta, Georgia.
Sure.
Right? And so I have to imagine Coca-Cola being like one of, like, has to be one of the top 10 biggest brands in the world. Their impact on the surrounding area has been massive through the years. And that, one, I bet most people literally just are drinking a Coke.
Like an actual, like, brown water Coke.
Right, actual Coca-Cola Coke Diesel.
Right, but like, yeah. I have a hard time understanding the context in which somebody would say, like, what kind of a Coke would you like?
Right.
Like, that to me, it feels almost too all-inclusive. Like, I can't imagine the circumstance where you're like, yeah, like, I'm having a Coke, and like somebody brings you a Sprite, and like, and they were able to correctly interpret that what you wanted when you wanted a Sprite is a Coke. Like, I have no idea how in the parts of the country where everybody refers to it as a Coke, you would ever order a Sprite.
Right.
But I'm perfectly okay calling basically a what is Pepsi, what is a Coke, and basically I would say even Dr. Pepper and Mr. Pibb, I would maybe throw under this blanket category of, like, I'm okay with calling all of those Coke.
As, like, dark brown soda.
Yes, carbonated soda, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Here's the real thing, is that I think for the most part, I don't know why I have such strong opinions about this, because I don't even drink soda.
Strong opinions about things that don't matter.
This is what the whole pop cast is about.
I see what you're, we should change the name of it to Soda Corn Culture.
Everyone knows when you're saying pop, you're talking about popcorn.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but if I'm consuming really any beverage, like if I was consuming any soda, I would just say the name of the very specific brand, you know? So, like, I'm having a Coke, or I'm having a Sprite, or I'm having a Mountain Dew.
That is precisely what I would say too. So, like, if we were having, like, a LAN party, for example, I would say that we will be serving Mountain Dew Code Red.
Well, yeah, if you're having, like, an all-night, yeah, Halo, Xbox, Halo, yeah, 2 party.
Extravaganza.
Extravaganza. There's really only one beverage you could be consuming.
Dibs on the Banshee.
Dibs on, yeah, right.
I got here first.
I'm sure some of our listeners will remember the joys of inviting 15 friends over to play Halo 2 all night long in your friend's garage.
Yeah. The strangest thing about this is that I would say one of the most fun evenings that I had in all of high school was the night that we went to, the one time we went to a LAN party at Danny Bish Bishop's house.
Right. Way to name drop.
Yeah. Yeah. Danny Bish Bishop.
He's gonna be like your pilot friend who suddenly gets a ton of friend requests.
Oh my gosh, should I ever talk about that?
I don't know. Okay, let's finish your story. We can loop back to...
Okay. So anyway, we had a kid who was in my grade, and one night, I think he sat next to me in history, he was just like, hey, we're having like a LAN party tonight. Do you know anyone else who wants to come? So you and I went, we like had brought our Xbox, and there was like 7 TVs set up in there, and we just had like a whole bunch of junk food. And it was just super fun. We literally just played Halo the whole night.
Right. Yeah,
and it was a total blast, but it was like people that we weren't super close friends with. But for some reason, it just never occurred to me to just keep doing those with like our friends.
Mm.
It was like I went and I was like, wow, what a fun thing to do.
Right.
That's it.
That was it. It happened.
It's too bad I can't recreate this exact thing every weekend.
I think the true glory of parties like that is that in order to do it successfully, you needed, you know, 14 to 16 people there. And rarely did you just readily have available 14 to 16 friends.
Sure. Yeah, you know? That's a good point.
So it almost definitionally forces you to like leech out into the fringe friend group who might be interested in doing this, which is a great way to make new friends.
Which is exactly who we were.
Yeah, we were those people.
We were the fringe.
We were the fringe. Man, I fringed in hard because I came, this was mostly people in your grade, and you were like, I can fill out the party, like my brother could come.
Yeah, yeah.
So I really had no business there, but
It was great, though.
It was great. It was super fun.
Yeah.
And then, actually, this is so funny. Since, as adults, you did try and recreate this party,
or a
party like this, one night, and as it turns out, LAN parties are basically not doable at all anymore.
Not with a modern Xbox.
Not with a modern Xbox. You'd have to have a bunch of the old Xboxes, I guess.
Right, which is, the funny thing was, we had just bought several Xboxes for office use so that we had them for like different gaming channel related things. So that was part of like the way that I was able to accomplish it at all. So we had just got like several Xboxes and I was like, oh, this will be so great. We'll have everybody over. And as it turns out, I would have been way better off going on Craigslist and buying like five Xbox Ones.
Right.
And then being able to actually wire them together so that we're on like a home network.
Right, because what ended up happening was we had however many Xboxes we accumulated that night from people bringing them over and stuff, and even though we were all playing in the same house on several TVs spread out across the first level of your home,
we were still playing on the internet.
We were all playing online, not via LAN, which is where you're all connected to each other via, you know, wire.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we were all playing on the internet together in the same room.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was glorious.
Yeah, it was. It was like, you know, this is effectively the same thing.
Yeah, no, we got it done. We need to do another one of those soon.
Absolutely, yeah. We do. Absolutely, we do.
The other hilarious story, though, we talked about my pilot friend, who I think maybe was in like one of the very first episodes of Popcorn Culture.
Yeah.
I have no idea if we ever came back and readdressed this in a future episode or not.
I don't think
so. I had talked about how one of my friends is an airline pilot and how his Instagram is like so cool because he has all these like really awesome pictures, you know, from this spot that so few people get to be in.
Yeah.
You know, like he's got such unusual access to planes.
Yeah.
And the views of planes. And so after that, I think we linked it in the bio and or in the show notes. And he messaged me and he was like, dude, I have gotten like 75 follow requests from people listening to apparently your podcast.
?
I haven't talked to this guy in probably like, you know, 3 years or something like right. that. So oh, the sheer glory of it. Sheer glory. Yeah.
Well,
so, shout out to Reuben Chapman the 7th.
Yeah, we'll link to his Instagram in the show notes.
Again.
We're going to make your Instagram famous, Reuben.
Yes.
You have no idea.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so the last token that we can touch on before we close out today's episode is people have pointed out that I say Shirley a lot.
Please don't call me Shirley.
You will have just made so many people so happy.
I have gotten so many requests from people saying, every time Ben says Shirley, surely Jay is going to respond with, please don't call me Shirley.
Shirley. Yeah.
Naturally.
I think it is a word that I think I have found that when we are specifically communicating on the podcast, I'm using because there is like this phenomenon of improv that I think we're getting to practice by doing this, where it's sort of like the yes and.
Yeah.
Why? The whole thing is that, of course, like we don't let a conversation run to an end. The goal is to stretch it and
keep having a conversation.
Exactly. Surely. So I think for some reason it is like a word crutch that I have found that I use specifically in the context of recording podcasts as a way to carry on conversation.
Right. It's a conversational bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's it. That's why I keep saying it.
There you go. Well, that's because I don't notice it. I'm going to try and listen in real life to see if you use the word Shirley more often than a normal person might otherwise ever use it.
Man, it blows me. I know that I must say it more than never because I have heard people say to me, please don't call me Shirley.
The fact that that joke for the uninitiated, the ending a sentence or saying Shirley and someone saying, please don't call me Shirley is a joke from the movie Airplane, which I don't even know when it came out, like in the 70s.
Sure.
But it is a joke that has endured strong.
I just said sure. Man.
There it is.
Maybe I'm worse about it than I thought.
But I wonder, am I doing this too? Is there a word I'm leaning on? Do I say a particular word a lot or a phrase?
You're constantly original and creative with your word choices.
All of the time.
You would never say buggy.
I would never make a mistake like that.
Of course not.
Absolutely not.
Goodness, guys, we've covered so many different things
in
today's episode of The Pop. If you guys have any moments.
Or the soda.
where you're in the soda. If you guys have had any moments in your life where you are fairly certain that you entered into a parallel universe where you continue to survive, be sure to send us your stories. You can email them to popcornculturepod@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter. I can never remember our actual handle name.
@apopcast.
@POPcast.
Yeah. Caps don't matter, but yes.
They matter to me.
Okay, they matter to you. Also, I'm going to give a shout out to our Reddit page, because I was just checking it out before this episode, and there was more action on it than I might have expected.
Really?
So just r/popcornculture. Go give it a check it out if you want to discuss some stuff.
There you go. Yeah. Also, there is one last thing that I have to call to. Okay. Once upon a time, we talked about loofahs.
Oh, yeah. Do you mean body mops?
Body mops. Is actually, so what we were discussing the whole time, we were trying to describe these like mesh plastic sponge things that are decidedly better than washcloths.
Oh, yes.
With an F.
Yeah.
Washcloths.
I was like, Ben, be careful. You just said washcloths really wrong.
Did it on purpose.
Yeah.
Watch out for that.
Watch out.
Someone's going to notice.
Yeah.
It turns out they are called body mops, which is horrid. No.
I think this brand, someone said it to us, Wilco is calling their loofah a body mop. But I think what we found was the consistent title for them was poofs.
Poofs. Okay, poofs. Well, I did
shower
a...
Shower poofs.
I just Google searched body mop.
Yeah.
And they do come up. The very thing. There's also a single image of a child with what looks like mop material attached to its onesie for cleaning the floor as they crawl.
Hilarious.
So that's a pro tip for you to take home to the twins.
Yeah.
Keep your floors clean.
That's right.
Thanks the children.
That's right. They'll just scoop it right on up.
There you go.
And his body mop sounds so gross.
It does. I hate the sound of it. Like,
sounds
mops?
Like someone is taking an old mop and giving you a shower
with
just
it.
Rubbing it on you.
Mops are dirty always.
Always.
Like, you are not cleaning the floor with a mop. You are like spreading dirt into smaller dirt.
Yeah, mops are gross.
Mops are disgusting. And a body mop is not a title that I'll ever adopt. Maybe I will, though. This is, sometimes I like things that don't make sense.
Yeah, it's like, you can be like, yo, hey, when you're at the grocery, could you make sure you throw in a body mop to the buggy?
Yes. Oh my gosh.
And Alice is gonna be like, I don't know what any of that just meant. I'm getting Arby's for dinner.
There you go. Yeah, I'm bailing on it.
I'm bailing
on the groceries altogether because of what you just said. All right, guys. Until next time.
Pop, pop.